Okay, this coming Shabbos, we're going to have the wonderful opportunity to read Parsha Shelach, which of course begins with the command to send the spies, Shelach Lecha Anashim, and Moshe Rabbeinu says to the people, to the Meraglim, Urisa Masa Aretz Mahi, go ahead and check what kind of land is it. Sa'amai Yoshev Alea, Uma Aretz, go ahead, check out the land. Hatovahi imra'a. Is it a good land or is it a bad land? How could Moshe Rabbeinu need to instruct the Meraglim to investigate the quality of the land? Wouldn't this have risked the people's resolve to proceed to Eretz Yisrael? After all, why would you ask them to do something that should have been pre-established and pre-accepted? So Rav Shimshon David Pinkus explains that the secret to Eretz Yisrael is how attached we are to it. Moshe Rabbeinu feared that after the Chet HaEgel, the people might not realize the greatness of the land, and thus he asked the Meraglim to check the land to know if their perspective showed how much Hashem loved them through their ability to love the land. This explains why, when the Meraglim come back later in Pasuk Chav Zayim, we find they come back and they mention how beautiful the land is, Vizet Piriyah, and this is its fruit. It's interesting to note that there seems to be this tremendous stress on the fruit of the land, both in Moshe Rabbeinu's direction to the Meraglim and in their report. They even bring back Vayichrasu Misham Zmora, right? They carry back the cluster of grapes. Why? Why is the fruit of the land so central? So the great Rosh Yeshiva, Reb Chaim Sabato, Rosh Yeshiva and Malei Adumim, explains that Eretz Yisrael gives off its fruit generously, but it only does so to its own children, which we find in Yechezkel. Yechezkel constantly stresses this idea as well when he talks about how when Bnei Yisrael come back to the land, they will come back to the peros of the land. So when Bnei Yisrael are about to enter the land, it bears fruit, which is why Moshe Rabbeinu extends the test to show that the land was ready for them. But conversely, when Jews are removed from the land remains desolate, and it doesn't produce for other nations, who, by the way, become discontent with the land, right? The Meraglim found the fruit of the land, and they see that Taka's incredible. But instead of seeing this message that the sign contains, they compare it to the people. Right? Not only the land being incredible, which we'll discuss in a moment. So the Meraglim chose to rationalize. Just as the fruit are unusual, so too are the people. So because in their haste, they lost a valuable clue as to the benefit of Eretz Yisrael and our appreciation of the personal connection it has uniquely for us, which becomes a great challenge. We see that the Meraglim report that that they were people of stature. Rashi explains that they were big people, while Targum Yonason explains that they were people with big and bad midos. Now, how could the land of Israel raise people with bad midos, which is the antithesis of the land itself being a land that's kadosh? How could non-kedusha and such lousy midos coexist on a land that's filled with kedusha? So my Rebbe and friend, Rabbi Baruch Simon Shalita, cites the Maor Shabbat Torah, who explains that the more the land exudes Kedusha, the greater the energy to withhold the Kedusha. In other words, there's like a back and a forth. There's a tension that exists. When you find something pure, the koach hatumah around it is greater. And thus, the bigger the Kedusha, the greater challenge in the Midos against it. Rav Shachter Shalita would also utilize this idea when he would explain to us that the concept of Arad Eretz Yisrael Machkim, that the land of Eretz Yisrael is Machkim. Rav Shachter would tell us that only applies to those who acquire the knowledge before coming to the land. If you come into the land confused, then the confusion can continue in the land of Eretz Yisrael due to the challenge of being in the land. Eretz Yisrael is like a supercharger, but a person has to be able to know what he's going to be supercharged from in order for him to benefit out of Eretz Yisrael. That's the midos that is discussed. So, of course, the people of Ayotziu, Motzei Haaretz Diba, they go ahead and they speak badly about the land. But Kalev silenced them. Ayas Kalev Esa'am, the Torah tells us in Parakit Gimel Pasuk Lamed. And Rashi explains that he silenced the people in order to get them to listen to Moshe. As the Gemara explains, he says, is this all that Ben Amram did? And this show, and then showed the people that Moshe Rabbeinu did great things for them. But the people stopped when they thought he would, by calling Moshe Rabbeinu Ben Amram, that he was going to join the fray. By silencing them into thinking he was going to join them, he disarmed them, albeit momentarily, and ran with his big break. Now, why was the momentary silence worth it if the people were going to go right back to their complaints a moment later once they heard him out? And furthermore, Kalev apparently receives three rewards for this. He becomes known as the forefather of David HaMelech, he receives Chevron, and he's called an Eved Hashem. Well, he does a moment's worth of work, and he collects three parts of reward. Why would that be the case, especially where it doesn't last? So Reb Zilberstein Shalita explains that when tempers fly, people develop a mob mentality. When you can calm people down even for a moment, then you can let the tempers calm, which allow the people the opportunity to calm down. We find also, after the punishment is handed down, the Ma'apilim come up and they say, Hinenu ve'alinu, here we are, we're going to go up. What happened that they decided to enter all of a sudden? And we see that HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't really appreciate this event. So the author of Kelim explained that once there's any command, it becomes a challenge to comply. This is the case even when the command is precisely what the people had requested. If I tell you to do this, you're going to automatically want to go ahead and do the opposite. What a great challenge and understanding of the human psychology and the human psyche. Later on, after this whole episode, we find out the episode of the Mekoshesh. And Rashi says that this is a very negative statement about Am Yisrael, that already in the second Shabbos of Jewish life, right, the people couldn't observe Shabbos. And so he turns around and he says that's a pretty negative deal, that's a pretty raw deal. But why is that a negative statement about the people as a whole? One person was Mechal of Shabbos. Why is that a very major negative statement? So Rav David Soloveitchik Shalita answers that even if there's but one Mechal of Shabbos, it's a negative statement for Klal Yisrael. For had they been concerned about the Mekoshesh and about Shabbos observance in general, then he wouldn't have been able to violate the Halacha, and thus it's a negative about the entire people. Finally, the Parsha ends with the story of the tzivoy of the parsha of Tzitzis, and we're told so the Shari Tshuva in Orachaim Simcha Abdallah Sivkatan Beis, the Shari Tshuva notes that one needs to understand that mitzvos in general don't protect one from doing averos, but that the mitzvah of Tzitzis does have that unique ability. And he cites the Gemara Menachos on Daf Mem Dalet Amud Aleph as a proof where a certain Amora wanted to engage in a terrible Isser, and when he saw his tzitzis, so he held himself back. So Rechesko Meller, Shalita, the author of the Shaila Torah, explains that this is because of the power of the Tchelis, which the Gemara tells us, Tchelis is Dome L'Yam, the Yam is Dome L'Rakia, the Rakia is Dome L'Kisei HaKavod, so it reminds us of the heavenly throne. It's similar to Yossi's reminder about the Musdiyukno Shalaviv survey. Meller cites the Meiri and Shabbos on Daf Nun Vav Amid Aleph, where the Meiri explains that this refers to modeling. What is this Demus Diukno? It's modeling, that in following the model set forth by a father, one learns what to expect from the children, and the same of the children. And the same can be said of the person who puts on tzitzis, who recalls by looking at the tzitzis the expectations that HaKadosh Baruch Hu models. You need sometimes to realize that we hold on to certain ideas, we need to hold on to them and expect more from ourselves in the process. Finally, in the end of the parasha, in the Haftorah, we read the story of a different set of Meraglim, these who come in the time of Yoshua to go ahead and check out the land in order to check out the city of Yericho. And when they are traveling, they come ad Beis Yishazona, that they come to Rachav HaZona, and the commentaries debate as to how to translate that word Zona. So Targum Yonason assumes that she was a woman who gave mizonos, as does Rashi, who assumes that she sold food. Targum Yonason assumes she was an innkeeper. The Gemara Mitzvachim Amdav Kuftes Vav Amar Aleph Kuftes Zayin Amar Aleph notes that she was indeed a zona in the biblical sense of the word, who converted to Yiddishkeit when the Jews were preparing to enter the land of Eretz Yisrael. Now, why would this the Meraglim choose to go to, of all places, a house of ill repute? So Rav Zalman Saratzkin Zatzal explains that had they gone anywhere else, they might have been identified and been victims of a lynch mob. However, to those who might have seen them at the Beis HaZona, their secret was safe. who wants to admit being at the home of the prostitute? And so therefore the Meraglim knew that the safest place with them was with Rachav. So long as she was on board with them, they would be safe and would be able to get away unscathed. We go through life and we need to appreciate Avir de Eretz Yisrael. We need to appreciate the gifts that HaKadosh Baruch Hu bestows on us, and remember to engage in Mahu Afata and experience a complete and total Shabbat Shalom for us and all of Am Yisrael.